We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It is now 8:09 here at WCCO. Welcome back. You are listening to Steele Talking, and I'm your host, Geralyn Steele. It is what I love to do is sit here and gab with you, and we've had a lot to talk about tonight. We sure appreciate you sticking and staying with WCCO Radio. All right. As I told you before, one of the most holiest of times is here for Christians, Christmas. But this year, many churches are dealing with declining attendance. And couple that with new tax laws that could affect nonprofits and another one on deductions may affect year-end giving. And with declining numbers, how are churches reaching out? This holiday season to recruit new parishioners has got to be very difficult. So we're going to talk about this for a moment. Of course, today is the first for Hanukkah. And I can just imagine how beautiful the celebrations are already beginning. Does this also happen with synagogues? Does it happen with mosques? Or is this really just the Christians that are having problems with holding on to their parishioners in the Christian faith? Well, Reverend Dr. Curtis DeYoung is the CEO of Minnesota Council of Churches, and he's joining me to talk about this exact thing. How are you, sir?
Good. How are you? It's good to be with you tonight.
I sure appreciate it. Well, in the article that I saw, many of our nation's churches can no longer afford to maintain their structures. In fact, 6,000 to 10,000 churches die each year in America. That was astounding. That statistic, for me, my heart just broke.
Yeah, it's a sad reality that we're seeing across the country, and it's more and more millennials and younger are connecting less with traditional forms of religion. Very spiritual group of young folks, but less connected to organized religion, it seems.
So how is it that you can get ahead of this? As you watch this unfold, what are you doing at your organization that, you know, to stave off these type of statistics?
Sure. The Minnesota Council of Churches represents primarily the Protestant churches, also the Greek Orthodox churches, and the traditional African-American denominations in the state of Minnesota. And what we're seeing with our denominations is a much greater focus on issues of social justice, trying to engage with what's happening in society, and trying to be more relevant to things that are going on. For example, our organization hosts a program called Respectful Conversations, which teaches people how to talk about difficult issues, whether it be politics, whether it be immigration or gun control. And we're finding that people are engaged by those kinds of programs that connect their church to what's happening in society.
That sounds great. At the same time, you know, when you've got young people leaving by the droves or never coming to church again, they go to church, maybe they're raised in the church, and by the time they're 18 and go to college, they're introduced to something else that says, I don't need to do that. Or maybe they have been disappointed with the way the churches are run. We've heard about scandal after scandal in just about every Christian denomination there is, and that has to be a challenge.
Yeah, definitely. And of course, we struggle with the very human nature of the church and the kinds of, as you said, failures and disappointments that have been there. And particularly young people, I think, particularly this younger generation, has a high value on integrity. And what they want to see in their religious communities is that same kind of integrity that they value.
Well, it seems like, you know, it's the new religion, it's just not to have any.
I think that is true for some. They even have a category called nuns, N-O-N-E-S, to represent that community. But I do think that young, in many cases, folks are not as far away from church as it may seem. They're just engaged less. And I think the Christmas season is an interesting time to think about that, because you will find that folks who haven't been in church much of the year find their way to church during the Christmas season because of the traditions, because of the way they were brought up. And that's an opportunity for congregations to demonstrate that they are trying to connect and try to be relevant. Because folks will be coming out for Christmas Eve services, Christmas choir concerts, et cetera.
Yeah, but traditions are some of the reasons why we all went to church. You know, my parents took us to church. They didn't just, drop us off and go home. We were at church. We were at Sunday school starting at 8:30 in the morning and then 11 o'clock service. And we get out by 2:30 or 3 o'clock, go home, have dinner with a visiting pastor coming to the house. Then we go to YPWW, which was Young People's Willing Workers, and we'd sit there for 2 hours. And then we go and have night service on Sunday night till 9 o'clock and then finally go home and have Monday off. I mean, this was the tradition of families, Christian families, going to Protestant churches. However, those times have really changed, where young people are choosing to go to church on their own, or they have the teen churches that maybe don't introduce them to other things. They don't have enough going on at some of the churches. The reasons why go on and on, but what do we do about it?
Yeah, I think that in the church, we have to find out where young people are, where people who have quit going to church are, and try to meet them there. So you'll find that some folks, because they're interested, as I mentioned earlier, in social justice issues, are active in organizing, working with groups like Isaiah, Minnesota Interfaith Power and Light, Jewish Community Action, which are groups organizing, faith-based groups who are organizing around issues. I think another place you can find folks today is online. So a number of churches are live streaming their services. And while that's a different form of church, it's still connecting with where you find folks today. So using social media, I think the church has to, go to where people are and find out what is necessary to connect.
So let me understand. You're saying that people are still connecting. They're just not in the pews.
Right. There are certainly people who have left the church, but there's certainly a number of people now that their church membership is online. They live stream, and sometimes they're going to a church that's in a whole other city. So
are we going to start seeing, excuse me for interrupting, but are we going to start seeing then the brick and mortar churches, just like the brick and mortar retail stores, start to fade away? And then it's not that people are unchurched. It's just that they've chosen to take their church online.
I think that's a real possibility. And it'll kind of depend on how people find a sense of community, because that's the other thing that church has always offered, in addition to worship and experience with God. But it's been a place to find community and to do life with other people.
Yep, like my sister, Pastor Janet Steele, she said, you have to belong, Geraldine. You need a place to belong. That's what church is all about. Yeah. Okay, so then let's talk about where do we go from here with the churches, the buildings themselves. I'll never forget the first time I read a story about England and how they were selling the churches because they had a mass exodus as well. And they were selling some of these old churches from the 18th century and turning them into condos and nightclubs and that sort of thing. And my heart broke, That was almost sacrilegious. Religious to me. So where do we go with the churches now? Do you think that it's okay to do whatever we need to do as long as those churches are respected, those buildings are respected? If people want to live in them, they want to party in them, whatever it is, how do we still say we can respect that building used to be a church, or do we need to do that?
I think that will happen as buildings become available. Another thing that doesn't often get noted, though, is that a lot of times when a church closes and leaves its building, another church moves in. And where churches are growing are among immigrant populations in particular, and they are looking for places to worship. So quite often, churches don't stop being churches, they just stop being that particular denomination. And yes, there are churches that become museums or apartments or whatever.
Condos.
But I think condos, yeah. Another thing that's happening is that congregations are coming together and sharing a facility. South Minneapolis, there's a place called Springhouse Ministry Center, which is three congregations sharing one building. So it's a part of their way in more challenging times to continue to thrive as a congregation, but cut their costs and share space. So they have their worship services at different times, and then they share the space for their outreach.
And I love that idea. Yet we do know that there's a whole lot going on in those churches that we never ever thought would happen, because those churches were built by, you know, from people's pain and passion for what they believed in. And so we're really getting out of a time of religion and going into a time of spirituality. Would you agree with that?
I think that's pretty accurate, yes.
If so, then I can just imagine what it must be like for those who works tirelessly to build those churches brick by brick to make sure that their congregation had a place to come and be safe. You know, in the Black community, in fact, other communities of color, that was the intent of the church. It was a place for the homeless and those that had needs to come and get those needs met. It was a place for people to come and participate and be a part of making a difference in a community.
That's right, true. And I think that for many, in many communities, and particularly even in rural communities in the same way, churches have been also community centers. They've been places where various nonprofits are set up, or there's a food shelf, or there's been other ways the community connects other than just Sunday morning. And actually, I think that's part of what the secret is for the survival of churches, is to make sure that they're involved more than one day a week, that they have something going on, and they become places that are held in great value in their communities.
So when you look at communities that have churches on every corner, and you know that there are some, you say to yourself, okay, it's just a building. As long as we are still worshiping in our way, we're okay. Is that where you stand?
No, I think those buildings need to be useful for the rest of the community. And I do think that the church on every corner reality is probably in decline. As I mentioned, these three churches, these three congregations in one church, are all three different denominations. They could have in the past been three of those churches at the corner. Yeah. Now they're sharing one building.
Wow, incredible. I'm looking forward to seeing what will happen, because it breaks my heart every time, because you know there were sweat and tears that went into every one of those buildings.
Right,
And it didn't take just one. It took a village to make it happen.
Yes.
So. I sure appreciate you joining us, sir. Thank you for being with us tonight, Curtis DeYoung, who is the Reverend Dr. Curtis DeYoung, who is the CEO of Minnesota Council of Churches. If people want to learn more about the Minnesota Council of Churches, where do they go?
They can just Google Minnesota Council of Churches, and that'll take them to our website. And we'd love to hear from folks. We have a newsletter that we send out every couple of weeks, e-newsletter. It keeps people up to date, not only on what we're doing, but what's happening in churches throughout the state. And while things do look dismal as we look at the statistics, there's still a lot of very vibrant congregations, and the church is still doing some of the very important work in society to challenge issues. And we are in a very, obviously, challenged time in our society, and we need the moral voice of the church more than we've ever needed it before, I expect.
Well, as long as we can see the moral code, I think that we'll fall in place. But when we can't see the moral code, sir, that's when it gets very difficult. Thank you for joining us tonight.
And we need the steels to keep singing to us from the church. So
We will. We will. Thank you.
All right.
All right. Have a good
night. Thank you.
Now, if you'd like to weigh in, we have a few minutes for you to weigh in at 651-989-9226. We'll be back in a moment. It is now 8:22 here at WCCO. It's 30 degrees outside, overcast skies, and whoa, not so bad. Come on, it's not below zero yet. We can handle this as we move forward Christmas. We do want to say again, Happy Hanukkah to those that are celebrating. And we will talk about Hanukkah with my son and the mom and Michael Hour in the 10 o'clock hour, the final hour here on Steel Talking. So we're looking forward to that. Stick with us. Also want to mention, if you'd like to call in about the churches, you are welcome to do so at 651-989-9226. Again, that's 651-989-9226. Or if you're outside the metro area, 1-866-989-9226. Churches are disappearing, or the congregations are disappearing. The churches remain. They stay in the community. Some of them are well taken care of. Some of them are not. And it's amazing what's happening. All of a sudden, you might have laser tag in one of those churches. Or maybe you'll have a nightclub. Like, I'll never forget about the first nightclub in a church I heard about in England. Really blew my mind. Let's go over to Chris in Minneapolis. He has a comment. How are you, Chris?
I'm doing well. Thank you, Carolyn.
Oh, she has a comment. Thank you. What do you think about this?
Well, it breaks my heart, too. And when you were talking about how people paid so much to build the churches. And I thought about my parents who sacrificed so much to build the church I grew up in and so forth. But I also want to say that my husband and I raised our children, just to just be true Christians. And sometimes I can't believe, but they're all going into the ministry and having just wonderful success. And so even though they have secular jobs as well, they all have this strong passion. So I really think that there's a whole lot of people out there who are doing tremendous things. And,
But you and I both know, Chris, that it used to be more. That's what we're making a point of tonight. You know, I remember when communities of the women who were not working, they would get together and they would still scrub the church and they would have all types of meetings to decide on what do the young people do? Keep the young people busy. That was the key at the church I grew up in. Keep the young people busy. So, you know, there were sports teams. There were debate teams. There, you know, we were always busy going to this, cleaning the church. The church had to be spotless every summer, Sunday. And so, you know, when I think back on how involved I was at church, I was more involved at church than I was at school.
That is how I was raised too, Geraldine. And I think I went to church 4 or 5 times a week.
Yeah, you and I both, honey. I went 6 out of 7. 6 out of 7, okay, Chris? Good Lord, if I don't get into heaven, something's wrong.
It didn't hurt me a bit. And I do feel like, we have such entertainment at home now that we didn't have when we were children. There's so many things to
distract,
so exciting, that kind of pull our kids away from the church. And it's hard to compete. You know, the youth leaders are having trouble competing with all the things going on and entertainment and things. So I think it is a challenge, but it is definitely up to the parents and grandparents.
Yeah, well, when I was growing up, they must have been competing for the parents' attention because they weren't trying to get ours, honey. They didn't care about, they didn't think, it was like, you better sit down and listen to the word of God. We don't want to hear what you want. I asked one time something about a scripture. I was like, I just don't understand what that means. They were like, that's all right. You'll get it eventually. Have a seat, baby. Have a seat. You know, that sort of thing. But they went after what the parents needed. The civil rights movement was going on during those days. And so here we are today, and it seems like we do have a lot of competition, but should it really be about competition? Shouldn't it really be about what the community needs, what the people that work so hard to for that church to be there, making sure that, you know, we are teaching what needs to be taught?
Right.
There you go. Chris, thank you for calling in.
It was a delight. And I really think people need to pray like they've never prayed before.
Wow.
I really do, because there's so much power in talking to the Lord. Have a good night, Geraldine.
You too. Thank you.
All right.
The big question, Shaletta, is, well, who are they praying to? You know what I mean? But I do appreciate spirituality. That means that our children are not lost necessarily. Just because they don't grow up to believe all that we believe doesn't necessarily mean that they're lost. You know, we all kind of back away. What's that scripture, Shaletta, where it talks about, you know, teach your children in the way they should go.
Train your child in the way that he should go. And when he is old, he will not depart from it.
Exactly.
Yes. I live by that one.
Exactly. Because, you know, we all walk away. I did. Yeah. I had so many questions. I used to sit down. We had debates. You know, my husband and I had debates trying to figure out, okay, well, what about this religion? What about this? And why do they do this? And why did the missionaries go and do this? Right? That was a date. A little wine, a little candlelight, and a big argument.
And a big Jesus debate. Okay.
Well, kinda. That was a long time ago. I'm happily divorced. Thank you very much. All right. We're going to have to take a break here. We sure appreciate all your comments and thank you. I know some of you are probably sitting at home right now having discussions with a loved one saying, did you just hear what she just said and what they're doing to churches? That's abominable to put a laser tag in a church. But another thing that we did not discuss with Reverend Dr. DeYoung is that there are new ministries where you can be, go to a seminary and actually get a degree in having a ministry in a bar. They're called bar ministries. This is real. Where you go and you sit at the bar, right? And you just wait for someone to come sit next to you. And if they start up a conversation with you, or you can start up a conversation with them, eventually it turns into something where that person needs advice or that person needs to talk about something. And your job is to listen and encourage. That's their ministry. Let me tell you something. When I was growing up, if a minister went into a bar, you're going to hell in gasoline draws. That's what they used to say. But today is a new day. You have to reach out as many people as you can to uplift, because at this point in our lives, we're losing people to suicide and so much more. Right? So I'm not down on people being able to have a ministry where they go out and they really touch the people. Now, if you strip them for Jesus, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. I can't receive it. I don't know. I don't understand it. But I'm not going to tell you that you're wrong. That's not my job. Yeah, ponder on that for a minute. I know I need to. You are listening to Steele Talking. I'm your host, Geraldine Steele. Coming up next, of course, we're going to have another guest, and we've got a lot to talk about. We've been telling you who some of our guests are. We have two coming up. Kim Havey and Russ Stark are going to talk about an amazing opportunity that the Twin Cities has that came out of New York. It's this relationship between New York and the Twin Cities, and I can't wait to talk about it. And that is coming up next here on WCCO. It is now 8:33 here at WCCO. Welcome back. You are listening to Steele Talking. Sure appreciate you sticking and staying with us right here on WCCO. Well, as promised, we have a lot to talk about, and we're going to get our other guest on the line with us. I believe he is now joining us. So let me introduce you to both of our guests. There was something quite remarkable that happened, and Kim Havey is joining us. Kim, of course, is... I got to make sure I get all their names correctly. Russ Stark is joining us. He is the Chief Resiliency Officer for St. Paul. How you doing, Russ? Are you there? No, not yet. Okay. And then we also have Kim Havey. He's a coordinator for the Division of Sustainability for the City of Minneapolis. Kim, it's great to have you in studio.
Thank you. I'm pleasure to be here.
Really. And Russ, are you there with us?
I am here. Can you hear me?
Hey, yes, I can. Welcome to CCO. Really appreciate both of you being a part of this really important discussion tonight. Because last month, former New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg, the billionaire with a B, made a massive donation to the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul, those two specific cities. Now, how did the cities get involved with the former mayor of New York City? Let's go right to our guest. Russ, why don't you tell me what was your experience with getting this money from the mayor, the former mayor of New York?
Sure. So the city of St. Paul has worked with Bloomberg Philanthropies before. They've had a program called What Works Cities that's really been all about kind of making sure cities are being innovative and finding ways to save taxpayer dollars. This particular program, though, was announced over the summer, and they announced that they wanted to work with at least 20 of the 100 largest cities in the country on climate change to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions, saying that it was a priority for them because of the lack of leadership at the federal level on that issue right now.
Okay, and as Chief Resiliency Officer, how is it that you're involved? What does that have to do with what you do for St. Paul?
It is actually directly involved with what I do. It's in the Mayor Carter's administration, he created my position in order to focus on mitigating our impacts on climate change, reducing our emissions, and adapting to the ways in which the climate is already changing here in St. Paul. And so that involves working on energy issues, working on transportation, because those two sectors are where most of our greenhouse gas emissions come from.
Mm-hmm. And Kim Havey, as coordinator for the Division of Sustainability for the City of Minneapolis, it makes sense to me. You received $1 million each, I believe, correct?
Actually, it was a
million five.
No, it was about $2.5 million all in, with technical assistance and consulting, as well as financial resources. So we haven't seen the full package yet, but that's the approximate estimate.
Mm-hmm. And do you get it equally?
Yes, both St. Paul and Minneapolis were chosen. But I have to say that I think one of the strengths of the Twin Cities is that we have both a very strong sustainability and resiliency offices, and we are considered leaders in the country and in the world. Minneapolis is part of the Carbon Neutral Cities Alliance, part of 22 cities worldwide that are working on achieving carbon neutrality by 2050.
Do we have a lot more going on in Minneapolis than in St. Paul right now when it comes to emissions and when it comes to how much light is used, how much energy is used, how much we are damaging the climate?
Well, I I won't do a comparison on that note, but the city of Minneapolis is a larger population. It does have a larger downtown area. But we are both equally working on reducing our carbon emissions. In Minneapolis, we are down 20% in carbon emissions since 2006, and we're on track to be down 30% by 2025. And I do want to say that nationally, that has been the trend since 2006. We've been down about 20% nationwide across the country on average. But one thing that's really startling is the fact that the Energy Information Administration is coming out with a report indicating that for the first time in over a decade, we are actually increasing carbon emissions by 1.5% in 2018 from 2017 nationwide. So we need to work harder on this issue. And part of this Bloomberg Philanthropies American Cities Climate Challenge is to accelerate the efforts that we're wanting to put in place so that we get greater adaptation and greater participation from everybody in the Twin Cities at reducing carbon emissions.
Well, obviously, both cities are doing a great job. Russ, tell us a little bit more about what St. Paul is doing to make sure that we can help the climate, our environment, benefit.
Well, we're really focused on reducing the energy used in city buildings and then also working with our partners in the private sector to make sure that they're reducing right along with us. We did a challenge over the summer asking large building owners to participate with us in starting to benchmark their energy use and then starting to show some reductions. We're also really focused on trying to make sure that the next transit investments in St. Paul are going to have a big impact to increase ridership. That's a great way to reduce our emissions overall. And then we're really excited about a new project where we're working with our partners, Our Car, who are a local nonprofit car share provider, to make their fleet all electric over the next couple of years and to make it available in more neighborhoods across both Minneapolis and St. Paul.
Well, it sure makes sense as to why St. Paul and Minneapolis were chosen. So congratulations to both of you for this, to both of the cities. Really is quite remarkable. At the same time, I have to ask, who decides where the money goes? How about you, Kim?
Well,
in Minneapolis?
Minneapolis has a very unique partnership with the utilities and as with the community. We have a clean energy partnership that was formed with our two largest committees, and it has an energy vision advisory committee, which is made up of residents and other constituents of Minneapolis that help make decisions about prioritizing our sustainability efforts. And I did want to put in a plug that everyone should think about getting an energy assessment for their home before December 31st. You can call, and it's zero cost, help being assisted by the utilities in the City of Minneapolis Sustainability Division to help everyone be able to find out what kinds of things they can do to reduce their energy use in their home.
Not enough people, though. Not enough people to do the job. That's a problem in Minneapolis with that program.
Yeah.
It's a great program, but you just don't have enough people. And people call to try to get on the schedule, and it's just too hard.
Well, we are still scheduling in. Anyone that calls before December 31st will be eligible for a zero-cost energy assessment. And it's true, it is scheduled a couple months out right now, but we're trying to build capacity, and we really need to see our capacity tripled according to the latest federal information. Our efforts are not enough, and we're continuing to look at ways we can improve that. So,
and is there a number for people to call?
They should contact the Center for Energy and the Environment. CEEMNCEE.org, and they'll be able to schedule an appointment.
Okay, I'm going to hold you to that. I'm going to call you up if people call me and say, I couldn't get through.
I'd be happy.
Because I had someone on to talk about that about a year ago. Yeah, because it's such an important program.
Thank
you.
Yes,
they weren't
it
able
is.
To reach it. So keep doing it. Please do.
Thanks.
When it comes to St. Paul, Russ, how do you decide where the money is going to go?
So we proposed a number of different activities that we're going to do with Bloomberg resources over the next couple of years, everything from the car share program that I mentioned to the work on our city buildings. We're also really excited about the opportunity at the Ford site, where we're going to see a massive new development over the coming years to make sure that it's done in the most sustainable way possible. One of the things that St. Paul's been pretty strong on over the last 10 years is we have a policy that says that any development that's going to receive city resources or even pass through funds from other sources that are coming through the city needs to meet a high standard for energy efficiency and renewable energy. And so the Ford site will be kind of the biggest example of that in the coming years. And it's a great opportunity to really kind of show the way to a more sustainable future.
I just passed by that site on Friday night, just passed it. And I have to tell you, I was really frustrated to see that not much had been done. So when will this all begin?
So Ryan Companies has a purchase agreement with Ford to buy the site. And there's a lot of discussion going on between them and the city and the community about exactly what's going to be built there. They've put out their vision and proposal. Because it's such a massive development, we're really working on all the details of public infrastructure and what the private buildings will look like. And there's some negotiation because some of that cost will be borne by the taxpayers in terms of the public infrastructure. And so we're trying to make sure we can get all the goals met for the city, including affordable housing. But in particular, in my role, the sustainability goals, really energy efficient buildings and making it what we call net zero ready, so that as the electricity going into the site becomes cleaner and cleaner over time, it could possibly be carbon neutral in the future.
All right, let's talk about time. We don't have a whole lot of time. We're being told that maybe, you know, 11 to 20 years is all we have. And if we don't turn around, that we are doomed here in this. I mean, we just saw that, what was it, Illinois just had 22 touchdowns of tornadoes. I mean, can you believe that during this time of year? So it's just a little nuts for me as you watch it all unfold. It really sounds like what they've been telling us now since 2000. Remember Al Gore warning the country that they've been telling us that this is going to happen. So when you talk about your goals, do you consider what the scientists are telling us? Let's talk to you, Kim.
Absolutely. This is one of the reasons why we're so excited about working with the Bloomberg Philanthropies, is that this is going to accelerate some of the great things that we have going on. Right now, we're already commercial benchmarking energy for all of our buildings over 50,000 square feet, and we're going to be doing that for our multifamily buildings, as well as for using energy disclosure on all sale of new single-family homes. And this is really accelerating the efforts that we are working on doing. One of the other really unique things that's part of this is a new way to look at transportation and looking at mobility as a service, the idea of being able to connect the different types of mobility, such as electric cars, our cars, rideshare services, metro transit, all of those kinds of things connected in one place using one app to get you from point A to point B. One of the most significant things people can do to reduce their carbon footprint is to be able to walk or bike to anything that they're going to go within a mile or two. Mm-hmm. It's something that everyone can do without having to sort of change the world today, but it does have a huge impact mm-hmm. on their efforts. And what we want to do is see people really move into the new future of transportation, one that is a low carbon transportation future, because that represents about 35% of our total carbon emissions in the city of Minneapolis, and we really need to change the way that we're doing it. And we have the technology, and it's really fun, and it's going to be really great and cool to make it easier to get around using all the technology.
And we are seeing a lot of that. We're seeing a lot of foot soldiers in Minneapolis and St. Paul. You're seeing a lot of bicycles out, but it's only three seasons of the year, right? And so who are some of your partners, Russ, that you guys are working with? Are you talking to the Metropolitan Council? Are you working with just tell me about some of the partners.
Sure. So I mentioned our car. We do a lot of work with the Met Council, certainly in transit planning. Kim mentioned the Center for Energy and the Environment. We also work quite a bit with them on energy efficiency programs across the city. Mm-hmm. There are other groups like Fresh Energy that are really doing a lot of work to make sure that state legislation is as strong as it can be on things like renewable energy and efficiency.
And is it strong enough?
There's a lot more that the state can do, and there's a lot of great discussion starting about that with the incoming administration that I'm excited about.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel the same way, by the way, Kim?
I think the state needs to do more. I think the state needs to be more aggressive on their renewable energy standard, and that we need to continue to push hard to decarbonize our electric grid and to really look at alternatives such as net zero energy housing or passive housing to reduce our dependence on natural gas for our heating load. Mm-hmm. Those are very big futuristic things, but they're within sight and they're doable. But we have to be able to set a goal. And we have
within that goal that we have for the nation, within that 20-year, less than 20 years?
Yeah, I think, well, we have to start here locally. I mean, if we're not going to get support at the federal level, we need mm-hmm. to do what we can here. And the cities have traditionally been leading the way on this. I mean, Stockholm and Copenhagen are looking at being carbon free by 2025. We're looking at 2050. We can do that within the next.
But isn't 2050 too late? That's what I keep asking. We should be. We are the biggest consumers, right? We're the ones causing some of the bigger problems. Us, China. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So okay, let's talk about that for a minute, Russ. Because if we know that you have this money now, and that you know exactly, you know, you're pretty clear on where you want it to go. The two cities. Are you guys going to work together with this money to make some significant changes?
We absolutely are. In fact, Kim and I have really started to get to know each other and are working together and planning to do a lot more coordination between the efforts in the two cities.
You just made my day.
Minneapolis is further along than we are on a number of fronts. Mm-hmm. I think we've got some things to teach them as well. But in either case, there's we can do a lot more together than going our separate ways.
So what's number one on your list? What's the first thing you need to do with this money?
My biggest priority project with the money is this idea of mobility hubs. And as Kim was saying, low carbon or no carbon mobility options for people. You know, we're experimenting right now with the electric scooters that have been out for the last several months.
I hate those scooters. Can I just say that? They like litter all over the city. Seriously, it's got to be a better way. Make them cool or something. Please.
I think they're, you know, it's a new technology. I think we're still understanding the best uses for it. But that's just one example of the ways in which we can give people options that they didn't have even a few years ago to get around town in a much lower carbon way.
I appreciate that. I wouldn't call it like a new technology. I mean, they're scooters, but of course, the way that we use them is new technology. That's for sure. And I appreciate it. Don't get me wrong, Russ. It's just so frustrating to see them all.
Absolutely. But the idea of at the same time that we're reducing carbon, I know one of our big goals in St. Paul is to make sure that we're doing it in a way that is also benefiting our lowest income communities. Mm-hmm. So making sure that people in our lower income neighborhoods have more mobility options than they do today is as important a goal as the reduction in emissions. We're similarly planning to do some work around workforce development, trying to make sure that people have opportunities in these growing sectors like the solar industry and in making buildings more energy efficient.
All right. So, Kim, here you are. You got to make that first decision on what to do with this money. Do you agree with what Russ said?
Yes. I think that the priority for us to be working together is going to be on the mobility and transportation side of things. We put a priority of that in our application. And I think, you know, the connection between going electric and to low carbon is also very connected with our overall city goal, which is to become 100% renewable electric by 2030 and for the city enterprise by 2022. So the connection of moving to electric or utilizing electric as a way, part of the transportation, and then decarbonizing that energy source, that's a win. That's an ability to accelerate that. And one of the things I think is so exciting is by working together with St. Paul on this particular grant is that we're going to be able to make the connections on these transportation hubs. I'd like to see that there's a transportation hub within a half mile of every resident in the city of Minneapolis. That means that you can walk to be able to get to your next appointment, to get to your job, to get to your run your errands, and it's going to be easier, and it's going to be a major change that's going to be for the better. People are going to be healthier, happier doing it, and we'll have less congestion as a result, too.
We got to take a break. If you can stick with me for just a moment, Russ Stark is joining us in studio. He is the chief. I'm sorry, by phone. He is the chief resiliency officer for St. Paul, and Kim Havey is in studio with me, coordinator for the Division of Sustainability for the City of Minneapolis. We'll be back to give our final thoughts in just a moment. Here at WCCO. Welcome back. You are listening to Steel Talking. I'm your host, Geraldine Steele. Russ Stark is joining us by phone. He is the Chief Resiliency Officer for St. Paul. And Kim Havey in studio with us, coordinator for the Division of Sustainability for the City of Minneapolis. Kim, am I saying your last name correctly?
Havey, that's
correct.
It
is Havey. Hey, yes. I actually got it right. They are the beneficiaries in Minneapolis and St. Paul because Michael Bloomberg has sent money over to the Twin Cities because they actually are doing good by the environment. They're doing what they're supposed to do, and he wanted to support that. Now, there were other cities that were a part of this as well. Do you know anything about that, Russ? Do you know about some of the other cities, or do you have relationships with them that have become greener?
We do. We're two of the 25 cities that are part of this Bloomberg effort across the country, and that includes cities from really big cities like San Francisco, Boston, and D.C., Seattle, not San Francisco in this case. And we've got relationships with many of them already, but really looking forward to the opportunity to work more closely with these cities that are all going to be Bloomberg Climate Cities and learning about their most recent efforts and how we can learn from each other and kind of amplify some of the same work going on around the country.
So, Kim, does this have something to do with mobility hubs? And tell me what they are.
Yes, mobility hubs are really a centralized location where you can access all different forms of transportation, from the scooters that we talked about, the electric hour cars, charging stations, ride share, which, by the way, save carbon and pool your ride share on Lyft or Uber, and access to transit like LRT and Metro Transit. And right now we're looking at one of our first ones in the Ramp B as part of the MnDOT development on the west side. But again, these are really great opportunities where you're going to be able to connect in with different kinds of transportation hubs. Just like in Minneapolis, we've got a park within every half mile. We're looking at saying, how can we get a transportation mobility hub within a half mile of every resident, reducing the need for a car or even a second car, and increasing the dollars in people's pockets because you're not spending it on these cars that you have to use to get around. We're going to change the way that we look at transportation and make transportation a service.
Okay, so some of those Ubers and Lyfts and those, so, you know, were you sharing rides? Of course, that's a real problem with them idling. You remember with the Super Bowl this past January, that was a real issue. You know, how long can they have their cars idling without it doing a lot of damage? Are we considering those types of things that can do more damage than, you know, having a lot of us out there?
Yes, I mean, this is why we're really looking at ways that we can work with Lyft and Uber to incentivize drivers to utilize electric cars. And at these transportation mobility hubs, we're looking at utilizing some of the Volkswagen dollars that came from the big Volkswagen settlement to put in DC fast charging, which will allow cars to be charged up within a half an hour, just like Tesla is putting across the country. Those will be available to the Lyft and Uber riders, along with other kinds of coffee shop, interesting activities that will kind of create a community hub around that. But that will reduce the use of combustion engines for Lyft and Uber and shared rider services.
Well, with Tesla's founder, we just hope that we'll continue on that road because, of course, you know, when the leadership stepped down, a lot of changes can happen, right? That's going in the opposite direction. And then finally, I want to ask you, Russ, about, you know, comparing us to other cities. Did all of you that won this money, were granted this money from Michael Bloomberg, was it the same amount of money? Did other cities get bigger amounts of money depending on their size?
Oh, it's the same. They're saying it's $2.5 million over 2 years per city. And we're, as Kim mentioned, we're still getting all the details about exactly how all that will work. It's not cash that they're giving us. They're giving each city a climate advisor, so essentially a full-time person to assist with the work, mm-hmm. and then all sorts of technical assistance, whether we need legal assistance or research done or just to compare notes with folks who've done this work elsewhere in the city. That's how most of the assistance will arrive. They may support the work of local nonprofits that are partnering with the city on some of these projects.
Yeah, I remember when some of this started about 2.5 or 3 years ago. Am I right about that?
Not that I'm aware of. It's pretty new, yeah.
This program is brand new. There was a separate effort by the Rockefeller Foundation called the 100 Resilient Cities.
Yes, that's the one I'm talking about.
Okay.
They had a beautiful website, by the way. And it was so great to see what all the cities were doing. But this is completely different?
It is. So that was Rockefeller, and this is Bloomberg.
And is the Rockefeller one still going?
It is. And in fact, Minneapolis was one of the grantees. St. Paul was not. So I know less about the details of the status of that one.
Okay. Wow. How about that? So maybe we'll see more and more of these climate advisors, more of these companies that are looking out and saying, hey, these are cities that are doing the right thing. Let's give them the support, the financial support, advice, you know, make sure that we're looking at what they're doing to do the most in the least amount of time. Is that where we're going, Kim?
Absolutely. This program is meant to accelerate efforts that maybe are in our early stages or in a pilot program and mm-hmm. scale them up to get major impact in a short period of time. That's ultimately the goal. And in conjunction, by creating a cleaner environment, cleaner air, a healthier economy, better jobs, greater access to folks who have been impacted by environmental injustice in the past. And that's part of this overall package. How do we knit this together to really sort of jumpstart our efforts and move from just testing and piloting to full scaling out?
Do something. Okay, and then you have the last word, Russ.
Well, yeah, we're just really excited at the opportunity. Being relatively new in my position and in the position being new in St. Paul, this will really multiply our efforts for this next 2-year period. And you add the combination of that and being able to work so closely with Minneapolis mm-hmm. on some of these new initiatives, I think we're just really going to start moving a lot faster. And in particular in cities, I think, as Kim mentioned, there's an opportunity to make a lot of progress and kind of point the way for much of the rest of the country, perhaps mm-hmm. even the rest of the world.
Well, we are counting on it. Thank you both for joining me tonight. Russ Stark, who is the Chief Resiliency Officer for St. Paul, and Kim Havey, Coordinator for the Division of Sustainability for the City of Minneapolis. Thank you so much. We look forward to catching up with you soon. All right. We'll be back in a moment. As far as you can.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.